Welcome to another episode of In the Name of Service, a podcast committed to sharing the untold stories of those who selflessly serve. Each episode features an interview with men and women who have been called to a variety of service-focused roles, such as the military, law enforcement, ministry, volunteering, and more. You aren't likely to know the names of the individuals you meet here, but our hope is by the end of our time together, you'll not only know their stories, but possibly be inspired to write your own in some way. Humble in nature, but strong in character, these everyday men and women showcase what it is to truly be a servant. We're glad you're here. Now here's your host, Dr. Barb Thompson.
Welcome to another inspiring episode of the In the Name of Service podcast. Today, I am just excited that you're here to listen to another fantastic real story. Today, I get to introduce you to Isaac Lee. He's a lieutenant colonel retired from the Marine Corps, and he was a combat aviator and now turned author of the recently released book Hangar 4, which I've had the privilege of reading. I know you're going to enjoy the book and this conversation. So without further ado, Isaac, why don't you tell us more about yourself.
Hey, thank you first and foremost for having me on. I really appreciate it. And I'm definitely excited to talk about the book and some of the things we'll get into today. My personal background, I grew up in Lubbock, Texas, which is a smallish West Texas town, home of Texas Tech University. My dad was a high school coach, coached football and baseball. So he was a local celebrity of sorts when I was growing up as a kid. My mom was a teacher. It was just a great background, you know, to grow up in. Our family was very focused on sports growing up. Ultimately ended up going to school at Texas Tech. And honestly, I went to college really just because I thought I was supposed to, not because I had some big idea about what I wanted to be when I grew up. And over the course of my time in college, I kind of slowly started thinking about the military. And then the summer after my junior year of college, I was out at my parents' house one night and I was talking to my dad in the driveway, which is kind of where he liked to hang out in the summer at nighttime. And you could see the aircraft, the T-37s in the pattern at Reese Air Force Base there in Lubbock from their driveway. And we were having this conversation about, you know, I don't really like what I'm studying in school. I don't know what I want to do. And he started pressing me a little bit, you know, well, what are you going to do? And sort of on a whim, I just looked at those aircraft in the pattern over there and said, you know what, I think I want to be a pilot in the military. And as off the cuff as that seemed at the time, I know he thought I was probably crazy for saying it out loud. But in that moment, I just decided that's what I want to do. And I frankly knew almost nothing about it. So from that point forward, I just started doing the homework and digging in and figured out, you know, hey, how am I going to do this? And you know, next thing I knew, I was heading to officer candidate school with a flight contract for the Marine Corps.
Thank you for that story. I really appreciate that story for so many reasons. But one is just that as a young person, you know, someone might be thinking, my life is a mess. I don't know where it's going. I don't know where I'm headed. And I just want to tell that person that, you know, our lives often start out a little messy. We don't know where we're headed, but certainly that doesn't take away from any of our potential.
Yeah.
What do you think are some early experiences or relationships that really shaped you into the person that you've become today, or maybe even the person with the characteristics that allowed you to pursue hard things?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I can tell you exactly what those things are. So in my case, you know, growing up as a coach's kid, my dad also made time to coach me. So from a very young age, I was getting exposed to two things simultaneously, or a bunch of things simultaneously. You know, one was I spent all of my spare time hanging around up at the high school, watching him coach his teams. So I didn't realize it until much later, but I was getting an example of how to lead and how to be a great leader in an organization at a pretty young age. And then as an athlete and the way he coached me, you know, his focus was always on, you know, work ethic, competitiveness, be a great teammate, physical toughness. But the most important lesson that he came back to continuously from the time I can remember was mental toughness. And that's the term that he used. And there were a lot of layers to that, but mental toughness, you know, as an athlete, and it really applies to any high performance occupation. as an adult, right? Whether you're an elite athlete or an aviator or, you know, in the military, first responder. But it was really about that mental clarity, focus, attention to detail, and just being able to be in the right headspace in the biggest moments. So, you know, I started learning that and cultivating that, frankly, on a little league field before I was 10 years old. And that really came in handy later. So by the time I entered the military, all of those things were already kind of inherent in me, and they came in very handy, and they were directly applicable to all the things I went on to do as a combat aviator.
That's so cool. And I actually, if you don't mind, I just want to camp out here for just a second, because I'm sure other parents will be listening, like myself. I have two young boys and a daughter, thinking, I want to be like Isaac's dad. Like, how do I make it make sense? How do I instill these characteristics, this mental toughness, into my kids so that I know they can take it forward with them, with anything they choose to pursue? So obviously something he did made sense to you. You found value in it even as a child. Do you have any specific examples of how your dad did that?
I did take to it, but he was always able to give me tangible examples. And really, the way he framed it was very simple in the early stages was, you know, hey, if you're pitching in the Little League game and you're pitching as the best hitter in the league, if you're more mentally dialed in than that kid is, you've got a good chance of getting him out. So it was just about this total focus and concentration, and I'm going to throw this pitch exactly where I want it to go, and I'm not going to get flustered if the umpire calls it a ball when it was really a strike, because I have to reset for the next one. And just really overcoming those little things that can be frustrating and throw you off your game, just being kind of oblivious to those. And so he was able to provide me with examples early, and then I was literally go out there and test it and see that it worked. So I became a believer really quickly that as long as I could stay in that right headspace, that I had a good chance of doing well.
Yeah, sometimes it's just about being there in the moment for all those moments and just breaking them down piece by piece. We caught a snake the other day and my son was kind of freaking out. You know, we needed something to put it in. He at first didn't know if the snake was dangerous. And it was just one of those moments I actually kind of thought about you and the things that you were taught by your dad and instilled in you early on. And I just took that moment to say, okay, like when a problem arises or you don't know what's going to happen next, the best thing you can do is to stay calm. That's when your brain works best to solve the problem before you. And it was such a neat example of just what I felt like was preparing him for the future. And obviously it sounds like your dad did that very well for you. Now, skipping forward many, many years, thinking about your time in service, and this is kind of an impossible question because there's so much that's contained in a life of service of so many years. But as you reflect on it now, what stands out as being most significant for you?
Well, the most meaningful and rewarding part, honestly, for me is really the people and the relationships that I developed along the way. I mean, you know, you start out as a young guy and, you know, oh, I want to be a Marine, I want to be a pilot. And I quickly realized that that really wasn't what it was about. It really, for me, became about the people to my left and right, my fellow Marines and other service members, the people that I was in there doing it with. And I talk about that a little bit in the book. You know, we talk a lot about the enemy and the mission and all these things, but we were really, that's not why we were doing it. We were all doing it for each other. And those bonds and friendships and relationships were the thing that ultimately meant the most to me and will always mean the most to me from that experience, for sure.
I love that. And it's so visible throughout your book because the same people keep showing up, you know, time and time again. At first, when you're reading it, you don't know when they're going to weave in and out of your story, but you quickly recognize how important these other people are, even, you know, kind of on your conquest to be an amazing pilot and go to combat and all these other things. It's like those people brought a level of joy and motivation to keep you going rather than just kind of relying on accomplishments that you might have all on your own.
Totally. That was always the thing that was really like filling up my cup, if you will, as I went through that whole adventure.
So let's talk about the flip side of your service, if we can, for a moment. And I don't know what you are going to say to this question, honestly. What do you think was we've kind of heard about, and you even use the word adventure, which I love, the adventure of it all and the excitement and the amazing people. On the other hand, though, what for you was most difficult during your years of service?
I think the thing that became the most challenging was really, I kind of thought of it as existing on two different planets, where on one planet, you're this combat aviator, warfighter, and I kind of turned into somebody I honestly never thought I really could be or wouldn't have thought beforehand that I could be. But at the same time, I still had this expectation for myself, mostly, that I was supposed to also just be this normal, regular, sane husband and father, you know, at home. And it was really hard to even attempt to transition back and forth between those two worlds at times for me, especially once the war really got going and I did my first couple of combat deployments. I kind of evolved into this person with this mindset that was very necessary for me to be that guy in the aircraft and in combat. But it really became almost impossible to just not be that guy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. It wasn't a switch I could flip and turn it off. And that definitely caused difficulties and challenges for me in my personal life. But I believed wholeheartedly that that was very necessary for me to stay there once I was there, because I honestly just came to believe, like, that is my best chance to keep myself and everyone else around me alive. So even if the trade-off was some, call it damage in your personal life, then it was a trade-off you had to accept because the alternative was too dangerous to explore. At the time, it felt to me too dangerous to explore. Like, I was concerned that if I figured out a way to, say, turn that off or flip that switch, that I wouldn't be able to flip it back. And that could be a literally fatal mistake. So I won't say I struggled with it, but I was aware of it. Like, I became increasingly aware of it. And ultimately, that led me to become progressively more introspective over the course of my career, just in my own head. Like, how are you able to do this? Can you turn this off? Will you ever be able to turn this off? What is it about this that you're attracted to and like? Because I did really like it, like, almost to the point where, you know, I talk about it in the book, like, it became an addiction, for lack of a better way to put it. It's like all I wanted to do. But I knew at the same time, I had this expectation for myself and from other people to sort of be a different person at times. And I just couldn't quite do it. And so that was really difficult.
Right, right. And we'll get more into your mindset and some of the tools that you used. And I do want to get into that. But first, I just want to make the distinction of, like, when you say danger, you're really talking about the responsibility that you had as a pilot to keep people on board alive, not the flip side of that where you were necessarily like a danger, you know, to yourself or other people. Is that right?
Yeah. Like, it wasn't that I was like a danger to my family or acting like, you know, crazy at home or, you know, anything that would be perceived as terribly negative. It was more about just being mentally present, emotionally present, being able to be in those moments, enjoy those moments at home, like really be that connected husband, father that you think your spouse and your children need and want. But I just couldn't emotionally, mentally quite get there. Like, I was physically present and I would make an effort, but there was definitely like a barrier and some distance in there where I couldn't really go all the way with it, if that makes sense.
Right. And in the book, you use a phrase, you called it a dangerous distraction. You recall this story or time when you were sitting, you know, in the aircraft. It was just prior to a mission and you were having these kind of fleeting thoughts about, you know, your wife and your kids and what you used essentially to shut that down in the moment so that you could be effective in this other role. Could you tell us a little bit about that? It's a beautiful picture of compartmentalization.
Yeah. For some reason, I had a tendency to do that right before, call it a big mission. Like, it didn't happen all the time, but it was this thing I was aware of. And just the way it works out on time zones, both Iraq and Afghanistan were roughly 12 hours ahead of San Diego, where my family was, every time I was deployed. And there would, it wasn't conscious, but I would always have these few seconds that seemed like when I was in the cockpit, we're getting ready to turn up. I know I'm about to go do this kind of big, high profile mission. You're feeling the pressure and the weight of all of those things. And I would just quickly think about, I wonder what they're doing back home, because I knew, you know, I was 12 hours ahead. And so I'm usually doing these things, you know, after midnight, in the middle of the night. And so I always knew, it's, you know, back home, it's lunchtime or it's early afternoon, or they're on their way home from school, or they're just sitting around the house eating lunch. And it was like this little snapshot in your head and a reminder that life is still happening back home and you're not there and you're not part of it. And also this awareness that they have no idea what I'm doing right now. You know, like, they're having this very normal day and I'm strapping myself into this machine to go do this thing here in a minute. And I really hope it works out okay. And I was thankful that they weren't aware of that, but I was aware of it. So I would have these few seconds where I kind of thought about that and then immediately, yeah, have to shut it right back down. Because, you know, your total focus is necessary for what you're about to do.
Yeah, it was so interesting to read several times throughout the book. You actually, you know, have a number of the people, the souls, the lives on board, and even contemplating the lives that they might have outside, you know, that might be affected should they lose theirs.
Yeah, I was very aware of the, call it the weight of that responsibility. You know, knowing like, hey, I've got a crew of another three or four other Marines with me. We're going to have 24 Marines sitting in the back here in a minute, maybe an embedded reporter. And yeah, I would quickly do that math in my head of how many people back home are attached to all of us and how many people are going to be affected, frankly, if I screw this up. So you would have that. I had that awareness all the time of like, hey, this is a my responsibility. It's on me. And I'm going to get this done to make sure that none of those people have to live through that. And I would always put the onus of that on myself. And I was okay with that. Like, I was comfortable with that responsibility, but I was very aware of it.
Surely the weight of it sounds really outstanding, the responsibility, almost like there's this expectation of perfection, even though, I mean, that's really not possible. Not only because people aren't perfect, but there are just, you know, missions don't always go as planned. There's everything that you can control for, and then there's all of those extraneous variables that you can't control for, and then sometimes you do make mistakes. You had a great way of putting it in the book. You said pilots and air crew must have a short-term memory. Can you just talk more about that? Like, how can us normal people use that in our everyday lives to help us kind of move past our own flaws or mistakes, or, you know, just kind of randomly poor situations?
No, yeah, I do think that is important, and it was critical in that profession for certain. And what I meant by that really is it's really tying into our human emotions. So if you make a mistake in the aircraft, even if it's a small one or something doesn't go right, if you allow yourself to be flustered by that, it affects your emotions, which in turn affects your thought process, right? So you start to feel some level of emotion, whether that's anxiety or frustration or anger, and then that clouds your thought process and slows your thought process down. So now I can't make decisions as fast as I need to. And so what can happen is some small mistake can snowball into a much larger mistake or problem if you're unable to do that. So, but the same also applies to positive things. So if you start thinking, hey, I've got this all figured out, or this is going really well, I'm going to relax a little bit, the same thing can get you a little bit there. But it was all about really controlling your emotions, clarity of thought. And frankly, it really ties back to, you know, the things my dad was teaching me at a very young age about mental toughness. It's really all about that, maintaining my thought process, controlling my emotion, staying totally dialed into the situation. And I got to a point where I got adept at it enough that when I was really in the mental headspace that I needed to be in, that it felt like everything was happening in slow motion. And it wasn't necessarily happening in slow motion, but it was, my thought process was clear enough and running at such a high rate of speed that I was able to absorb, process all of the information, make good decisions in the however much time was available, and continue to execute at a high level. And, you know, that also ties back into, you know, the Marine Corps starts teaching new lieutenants about the decision cycle and the OODA loop, but when they're brand new lieutenants, you know, for that reason. And that decision cycle, understanding how much time is available, making the most use of that time, and then just being decisive and doing something. But in the aircraft, that OODA loop has to run at hyperspeed, because sometimes you only literally have a second. The information just changed. Something just happened. I have to make a decision. I have to make a course correction right now. We were going to do this. Now we're doing that. But if you're calm and your thought process is clear, you're able to do that at the speed that you have to. And so that's why I always talked about, like, yeah, short memory. And, you know, it's a roulette wheel. Every time you get in the aircraft, the odds reset themselves. So whether it went bad yesterday or good yesterday has no bearing on what's going to happen next. So you really have to stay focused on living in the moment and what's coming ahead of you. And to this day, I'm still that way about everything. I spend very little time thinking about what's already happened, because frankly, you can't do anything about it. So I really try to just focus on what's happening right now, what's in front of me, and live that way.
Yeah, that's so good to keep in mind. Again, like you said, for the mistakes and the successes, because I think we can get into this like positive, quote unquote, positive mindset, think that way about the mistakes and let those go. But keep in mind, for successes, you know, it's important to realize there's a reset for those as well, and not get into this magical thinking that we have control over all these things that we in reality don't have control over. It's important that, you know, we stay aware of our emotions, but like not let them rule the day.
But there is a negative side effect to that, if you will, I will mention, is that the better I got at that, the more I also sort of shut down a lot of negative emotion in total as a human, right? So that there's strings attached to all of these things. So in some ways that was helpful. It was definitely helpful in the aircraft and on the job, if you will, but it was also another, call it, detriment to my personal life, where you just kind of develop this numbness where nothing really phases you, right, which isn't necessarily a good thing either. So there were trade-offs for all of these things to perform at the level you needed to perform at to do the job, but that affect you as a human being and the rest of your life.
Right, right. I mean, I've experienced that myself. I'm not a combat aviator, but, you know, I can get tied to other things and into this logical way of thinking. And then I have kids, and trying to relate to them is a very different thing. It's like walking a tightrope. You never know what you're gonna get. So you can end up feeling, you know, very confident that the mental skills you've gained make you very successful in one area, but that confidence doesn't necessarily cross contexts into, you know, being a parent or being a spouse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, tell us about what catalyzed you to write this book. It's so fun to read. And it did. It went by very fast, and I really enjoyed it. You mentioned earlier you became quite reflective, or more reflective, kind of at the later stages of your career. Can you tell us about what catalyzed you to write the book, and, you know, what you think it might offer to the reader?
I did. And I mean, it was really the idea for this book and it coming together really evolved over the course of many years. And it started with when I went to officer candidate school, I started keeping a journal. And I originally did that just because I thought, this is the most awesome adventure I'm ever going to have, and I'm never going to remember all the things that happened unless I write some of it down. So I started this journal at officer candidate school, just in one of the little green notebooks they gave us, you know, kept it stashed in my footlocker, and I never stopped keeping it. And then, you know, as technology evolved and computers, et cetera, I started typing it, and it just became part of my routine. And I was particularly good about it on my deployments. And it was kind of this decompression exercise where at the end of the night or morning or just whatever schedule I was on, I would just kind of jot down like, hey, did this today or did this flight with these guys and this is what happened. And I really didn't have a plan for it other than I just thought like, oh, it'll be neat, you know, to have this someday. And, you know, maybe the kids will want to leaf through it and see what I was up to when I was gone all the time. But I had it. And then I transitioned out of the Marine Corps in 2017, got real busy there for a few years, just, you know, trying to reestablish myself in the business world, transition, and you're starting this whole new life. But it was kind of in the back of my mind, like, hey, you have this journal, you should do something with it. And if I'm being totally honest, for those first few years, it was quick and easy for me to just shoot myself down and be like, you know, who are you? What are you going to do? Write a memoir? Like, nobody cares. Like, get over yourself, you know, get on with your life. But I had continued to be very introspective and reflective and think about the experience. And I just kind of slowly talked myself into it and kind of slowly found my why for taking it and turning it into this book. And, you know, there were multiple layers to that. And say the first one was, I do think it's important for those of us who've served, especially in combat, to share our stories, because it's just another way to capture our history, you know, from different perspectives. So there was that. I felt like there's some lessons in there that might be helpful to other people, especially, you know, military officers who are up and coming. And, you know, I'm not saying my path was the right one, or I certainly didn't do everything right, but at least an example that might, you know, have some lessons learned, both good and bad in it. But really, at the end of the day, I was thinking about it in terms of all combat veterans, I believe, are in some phase of reconciliation, or call it seeking some kind of closure for the experience. And I don't know that any of us ever will totally reconcile our experience or actually find closure. But I think that's a process that we're all kind of privately going through, you know, and you move on from your time in the military and these crazy experiences, and we all just disappear into cities and suburbs all over the country and start these next phases of our lives that are seemingly ordinary, but you're still processing that information, and we all probably always will. So I kind of came to the conclusion like, well, maybe if I share this story, that it will in some way be helpful to other people. If for no other reason, I do think it's very helpful for all of us to remind ourselves and each other that none of us are alone in this, and none of us are alone in reconciling that experience. Like, so, you know, so many thousands of us lived it and shared it, and, you know, sharing it with each other just reminds us, if nothing else, like, we're not the only one. And maybe we can get some tips and pointers from one another that might be helpful along the way. So that was really the thing that kind of pushed me over the edge and was like, you know what, I think I should just go ahead and do this. And I'll share with you, like, one of the most rewarding things that's happened so far with this project is I had to send it out. I sent the, you know, earlier draft out to several people for some feedback and endorsements and some things like that. But I had a friend of mine who's actually still in the Marine Corps on active duty. And his feedback to me was, hey, he's like, I really appreciate that you wrote this. He's like, you know, you're articulate. You were able to explain like this experience in a way that I just don't know how to explain. And so it will be helpful to me to hand this off to, you know, my wife and my family members and better help them understand me. So, you know, if that's helpful for anyone, then that's extremely rewarding for me and really the real reason that I did it. You know, if it helps anyone or, you know, who had the experience or family members of those who had the experience, then the project is 100% worth it.
Oh, I fully believe it will definitely help people, not only veterans, you know, people who've lived that life, but non-veterans and family members. You know, I mean, I'm a veteran, but I wasn't a flyer. And so, you know, a lot of the acronyms and the equipment and, you know, the operational information, you still made it very readable and understandable in a way that I was pulled into the story very easily. So I know it'll be helpful. You kind of lived this, and don't take this lightly, but a super here, as far as we are concerned, you know, in this everyday real life, like a superhero kind of life where you learn to, you know, fly this amazing machine under really stressful circumstances. Your life was at risk and other people's lives were at risk. And there was a great thrill to that. And well, by the way, are you still flying? Do you still fly?
I don't. No, I decided before I was done that I wanted my last flight ever to be as a contributing member of a CH-53 squadron. And so I did my last flight when I was a commanding officer of a squadron and never flew another aircraft. And I don't think that I will. Like, to me, like, that was the experience. It was never going to be more exciting. It was never going to be more cool. And I just don't ever want to mess with that, I guess. It's like, you know, I made it through it. I got to the finish line. It's like, put a neat little bow on it and then move on to something else.
Yeah, I can totally see that. That's awesome. Well, I wanted to ask you a question, something we talked about in our previous conversation. You mentioned that you had sought out some counseling there towards the end of your career and just kind of your transition out of the military, helping you. You know, you've already been a really reflective person, but just unpacking some of those situations and how they affect you now and how they might affect you and your relationships in the future. Would you mind telling us more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm very open about talking about that. And I did become increasingly introspective and self-aware over the course of my career, kind of as all these events were unfolding over time. You know, and in the early stages of my career, you know, as a young captain, I was just doing it and I was thinking of it in these very traditional terms and I didn't quite understand it, but I knew I was able to do it. So you're thinking of in terms of like, okay, well, I guess I have the fortitude and the training and, you know, you're brave enough, whatever word you want to use at that phase, you know, to explain to myself how I was able to do these things. But as I progressed, I started to realize that I was able to do them, me and some other people, at a slightly different level than most of the other people around me. And when I started to realize that, I also had to acknowledge and accept the fact that I actually liked it. I was enjoying it. It was exciting to me. I wanted to be out there on all the most difficult missions and do all the hardest stuff, and the more dangerous, the better. Like, I had a real attraction to that. And that's where I started referring to it as an addiction. But once I acknowledged that to myself, I honestly thought, like, am I crazy? Like, I shouldn't be this way. This isn't normal to want to do these things and to enjoy doing these things this way. And I did think of it in terms of an addiction, because it's like a drug. No matter how much you love it, at the same time, you're aware that in some way it's probably having a negative effect on you. And so I was aware of that too. And I'm thinking about, well, what is the what's the other side of this coin? What is the negative effect that it's having on me? And that introspection just progressed. But while I was doing it, while you're in the Marine Corps, it's not something I felt like I could talk about. Because, you know, in aviation, we have aviation safety councils and human factors boards and all these things. And you don't want to flag yourself, per se, as someone who's overthinking any of these things or give any indication that this might be, say, bothering me. And it wasn't bothering me. And at least not in a way that was negatively affecting me doing my job. In fact, it was making me better at doing my job. But I was aware of it from a human perspective. So as I got to the tail end of my career, I was very aware of it. And I had been thinking about it a lot. And I felt like, you know, as soon as I'm done flying, I want to go unpack this and learn about it. I mean, I had a real intellectual curiosity about it. And I really wanted to better understand myself. And I also kind of wanted to just know, like, are all of these things that I've sort of just internally to myself decided that I believe are true, are they true? And so it was really this kind of journey of self-exploration that I was interested in taking, felt like it was necessary to take. And at the time, I will tell you, I felt fine. or at least what I'd come to know is fine. You know, it wasn't, it wasn't like I was depressed or having rage issues or anything like that. I was a very high functioning person, but I just knew that I'd had all these experiences and all that stuff was in there somewhere. And I felt like it was important to me to learn about it and get my arms around it so that it didn't manifest itself in a problematic way later. You know, I knew there's plenty of people who walk around and assume they're fine. And, you know, then I didn't want to be that person that 5 years later or so, or at some point just went off the rails and everyone's like, oh my gosh, what happened to that guy? He always seemed like he totally had it together. So to me, that's the step I chose to take to start exploring that. And I will tell you, it's the best thing I've ever done for myself. And I'm glad that I did it. And I immediately started learning a ton. And it really helped me start to kind of unpack and really start that reconciliation process for myself. And I don't think that'll ever end for me. You know, I won't ever totally find closure. It's something I'll work on probably for the rest of my life in some capacity. But just having that willingness to explore it and better understand myself has given me the tools to best manage myself, to be what I think of as, you know, the best version of myself going forward, you know, not only for myself, but for everyone around me.
Well, I'm kind of going to put you on the spot here because I know I didn't talk about asking you this beforehand, but it's just coming up now because of, well, actually a conversation I had yesterday, but you know, you've had all these exciting times. Now you're living kind of a different lifestyle. What are you bored? Like, what excites you now?
It's a great question. And it's something that I was very concerned about, honestly, coming out of the military, because I knew I had this, like, basically what it amounted to in the simplest of terms, this addiction to risk. I need to have a big challenge. I need to have some risk on the table. I need something to kind of stimulate me. Like anything that's too routine and too boring, I get bored instantly. Right. And this is actually a good one. But so I chose to transition into operations lane of business with small companies run by entrepreneurs. And I'm at my second one now, but I'll never forget this. I was with my counselor about a year after I'd been out of the Marine Corps, and I was basically asking him the question you just asked me, or I was telling him like, hey, I'm worried that I don't have enough risk in my life and that that is going to somehow manifest itself in a way that I'm going to, you know, I'm going to do something stupid. I'm going to get myself in trouble. I'm going to go jump on a motorcycle one day and go 120 miles an hour down I-15 and it's not going to work out well. And honestly, he just started laughing and he's like, you don't even see it. He's like, you're so ingrained in this, you don't see it. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, you did the riskiest thing you could do. He goes, you departed the military at a time when that was the safest option. The safest option for you is to stay in the military, get promoted one more time. You're established. You would be at a level where you're done getting shot at and doing crazy things. He's like, but instead, you decided at that point to get out and go work for these young, unpredictable entrepreneurs and call it a profession and a job that could disappear tomorrow, that could totally backfire. And you're sitting here complaining that your life's too boring. He goes, you don't realize how much risk you still have on the table. Like you naturally gravitate towards it and don't even see it. Like you're swimming in it still all of the time. And that was really enlightening for me when he pointed that out to me, to say like, oh, okay. Yeah, that actually does make sense. You're right. Like I do have risk still on the table. And, you know, and I think being in the business world, especially in small companies, is kind of the way I've found to keep that stimulation going for myself.
Well, that's refreshing to hear. I mean, based on all the conversations that I've had with, you know, high level performing military personnel, you know, it's a fear. It's a common fear. I'll just say it's a common fear that there's this expectation to be this quote unquote like normal dad and husband. And so I just want to say, like, there is no such thing, right? Like, you can be the dad that you want to be. You can be the husband that you want to be in a way that's personally, you know, significant to you and the people that you care about.
Yeah, for sure. And I am 100% guilty of staying way too busy for my own personal good. You know, I work a lot. I do a lot of volunteer work for nonprofits that work with military and veterans. I mean, somehow I made time to write this book. Like, I'm going 1,000 miles an hour all the time. And that's just honestly how I manage myself. And I know that I need that stimulation. I mean, when I'm not good is when I have too much free time to sit around and I get bored. That is my kryptonite. And it drives everyone around me crazy. It's still very difficult for me to just sit still and relax. Right. I've always been terrible at that. And I probably always will be. But, yeah, you know, that's what keeps me going. And that's what keeps me on an even keel. And it's what I do. And it is definitely how I manage myself.
Right. Yeah. And this is getting very personal, so don't answer if you don't want to. But how would you describe your relationships now?
I would say, brutally honest, they're still somewhat complicated. You know, there's complexity there that will always be there. I think on both sides of those relationships, just because of the experience, you know, and the perspective that we all have or had, you know, at the time and now. And I will say, like, you know, as a family, I give us a lot of credit for everyone always being willing to work on those things. And I certainly put the onus of all of that on myself. But I think we've all gotten to a point where we have a much better understanding of ourselves as individuals and each other. And that's very helpful. But, you know, I mentioned there's a part in the book I mentioned towards the end where, you know, we were having dinner one night, and at the time our son was still pretty young, you know, like 10 years old or something like that. And he did something or said something, and I just kind of shrugged it off. And he immediately piped up and was like, "Dad, a couple of years ago, if that happened, you would have gotten really annoyed with me." He goes, "But then you went to war therapy and chilled out." You know, and it was like this very astute observation from a little kid, you know, and kids, they're always going to tell you the truth. They're always going to tell you what they're thinking. And I felt like that really kind of encapsulated the scenario and kind of how that's evolved over time. You know, I mean, I think at this point, I mean, I still am who I am. We all are. But I think we've all just kind of come to better understand and accept, like, hey, this is the path and this is what got us here. And let's all focus on, you know, the way forward. And that's been, for the most part, positive. It's never going to be super clean. It's never going to be perfect. And it will always have its challenges and difficulties. But, you know, it's just part of the experience. I mean, I think it's very difficult for any family to live through that experience and come out, I don't even know what the right word is, you know, unscathed, normal, whatever. There's just some level of living with that experience and you know, it's going to have a little bit of an effect. And it always will.
For sure. Yes. I think like what I would highlight about the story that you just told was your son's comfort with saying something to you. And if we can communicate, like, anything is possible. No relationship's ever going to be perfect, but he trusted you with the information, that observation that he had. And I think, like, that's the perfect place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought it was very important for me. You know, when I first started going to counseling, I was very open and, you know, sat the kids down and told them, hey, this is what I'm doing and here's why. Like, don't be concerned. Like, everything's okay. You know, I didn't want to be alarmist or make it seem like a negative, and I always presented it in a positive light, and that this is a positive thing to do and an intelligent thing for me to do, and I'm doing this, you know, not only to help me but to help us. And so we've always looked at that, you know, from the very beginning. It was important to me to make sure that as a family, especially the kids, understood, like, hey, this is, you know, this is just part of what we do, and this is a good thing for us to make sure we can all kind of move forward in the healthiest way possible after this experience.
Okay, well, I have to ask this last question because I know that there are going to be people listening to your story wanting to go out and pursue the exciting, you know, adventurous dreams that they might have, you know, in their own minds and hearts, maybe go into the military or, you know, be an aspiring aviator or I mean, really, if they just read the book, it starts out with a really exciting operation. So even just from reading your book, they might get inspired to serve or contribute in some way bigger than themselves. So if there is someone listening who is relating to your story, but they don't know really how or where to get started in their own service journey, what would your advice be for them?
Yeah, I assume my primary advice would be just don't overthink it. I mean, there's so many great places and organizations out there you can plug into to serve, and it doesn't have to be the military. But, you know, there's a bajillion nonprofits out there that are doing great things for people every day. And we all have that opportunity, you know, to help each other. So it could be very basic community involvement that evolves into something else. But just get out there and do it. I mean, I definitely will say like the thing to this day that still fills my cup up the most is just doing things that have a positive impact for other people. And I try to as much as I can to fill my days up with those activities, because they are really the most rewarding. And I do hope that for people that read the book, get like everything they thought they were going to get out of it, and plus some stuff that they weren't expecting at all, you know. So there's certainly plenty of the war stories in there, and the missions and the things that happened. But it was really important to me to kind of open up about the other stuff we were talking about earlier too, you know, that sort of evolution as a person into a warfighter, and becoming introspective and understanding that and accepting that and moving forward. But I do think it's important for everyone to serve and find a way to just be involved and help other people, and hopefully have a great experience doing it. You know, it doesn't have to be anything as extreme as what I did or what anyone in the military does. But I think you come to a better understanding of yourself when you're in service to others. And that's really how we get to know ourselves the best and find, call it the best parts of ourselves to really share with other people. And that's what it's all about.
Well, thank you so much for your service. Thank you for writing the book. And thank you so much for being here with me today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, Hangar 4 will release on April 9th. It'll be on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the other standard places where you can buy books. So thank you again for having me.
And if people want to contact you, what's the easiest way for them to get a hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely. The easiest way is my website is isaacglee.com. There's a little icon up in the right-hand corner for email. They can email me there. It also has links to all my social media accounts. So I'm easy to find on, I'm posting stuff leading up to the book release on Facebook and Instagram. And those accounts are right there in the top right-hand corner of my website as well. So it's a one-stop shop. It's easy to track me down.
All right. Awesome. Well, I know that a lot of people are going to go and check out your book right now. Thanks again for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another incredible episode of In the Name of Service. If you enjoyed today's episode, please like and subscribe. And of course, feel free to share with those you feel would like to be inspired. Have a difference maker in your life that you'd like to see featured? Reach out to Dr. Barb Thompson at inthenameofservice@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.